Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Where are we going in America with healthcare? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores with our guest, Mr. Will Lane. He is the director of the Writing Center at Gettysburg College, a lecturer in English literature, a former chair of the Adams Hanover Healthcare for All, PA, and currently chair of Green Gettysburg. When do you have time to come and interview with me? That's very kind of you, Will. Starting with the current situation with what is generally called Obamacare, where do we stand and where do you think we are going with healthcare in America?
Well, where we stand is partway along in a journey that I think we really need to make as we move toward a situation where everyone will be covered affordably in the United States and have access to the care that they need. Perspectives on that vary depending on political perspectives, one's political views. But the facts seem to show that, surprisingly, Obamacare has been relatively successful in many ways. About 16 million people now have coverage who did not have coverage before. And costs have not gone through the roof, as predicted, for most people. Quality seems to be slowly, sometimes painfully slowly, improving as providers across the country innovate in a range of ways to improve the delivery of care. So there definitely have been some gains made. Here in Pennsylvania, with our new governor, Governor Wolf, Tom Wolf, we've now moved to an expansion of Medicaid, which we had not been able to get done under Tom Corbett, our former governor. And that has brought coverage to about close to 600,000 Pennsylvanians who also be part of the system. The problem is, with all that happening, we still have persistent problems. We have, as some of us, some of your listeners may have experienced, a persistent problem of underinsurance for almost everyone. Even those of us who are covered often find out that a great deal of our care is not actually covered. Right. When the crunch comes, there is, as I said, a slow reform of delivery, but there's still capricious pricing, which has been written about quite a bit in the New York Times and elsewhere across the country. There's no consistency in the pricing of care. And, of course, we have especially persistent cracks, so to speak, through which people can fall. We still do not have anything near universal coverage.
Let me ask you, friends of mine will say we have the best medical care in the world in all of history. That is true, I think, isn't it? And I want to know if you think so. But the problem still is we're not delivering the care as well as some of the other industrial nations around the world. That too simple?
Well, if you look at the data, in terms of outcomes, we're not anywhere near the top. In fact, in many areas, we're rather low
in quality
of outcome. Things like the mortality rate of treatable illnesses and things like that were kind of down on the list, and things having to do with infant mortality and other things like that, risk in giving birth, were nowhere near the top on those. And I think many people notice, I've noticed in my own care, that the technologically it's supreme.
But, okay, I get it. Yep.
There's a real tendency to resort quickly to expensive tests that may or may not be necessary. It's debatable. And, of course, when you're the person that's sick, you're not in a mood to debate shop.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
If you're critically ill or have a serious illness, you're not in a shopping mood.
No, you don't go from emergency room to emergency room saying, can you give me better care while I'm bleeding here on this floor? It was an overstatement then. There are areas, but I think I noticed that with the areas you mentioned where we're not superior, not supreme in the world, is our kind of social issues, infant mortality and so on. They're the very issues that we're having trouble reaching with our healthcare system even now. So these two are intertwined. Let me move you on to what the models might be for the future. I mean, if the situation is improving, I have heard, by the way, that Obamacare will not be an issue in the next election. I've heard that some of the conservatives are beginning to drop that as an issue. So we'll see. Maybe we can move on to the next day. But even if we can't, what are the models you'd like to hold up for us?
Well, I guess given that we already have come some distance from where we are, the question is whether we would move incrementally, improving care while we reduce costs and expand availability of care. And the difficulty there, I mean, there's a certain practicality to that. You try this out, you try that out, these small steps. But getting it to be coherent, achieving coherence with our system, getting the benefits in terms of cost saving that one could get with a different sort of model is rather difficult to achieve. Way at the other end would be moving to a model more like the Canadian one, which is a single payer, rather like our Medicare. In fact, one of the ironies that people sometimes point out is that our society really experiences, we have experience of every model that's available. We have Medicare, rather like the Canadian system. We have our veterans care that's rather like the British system, where a government employee provides the care. Physicians work for the government. We have some places that have something close to the German system, which is one of highly regulated nonprofit private companies, that about 200 of them in Germany that provide insurance. In those other cases, whether it's Canada, Germany, Taiwan, Japan, wherever, France has a particularly strong system. One of the keys is that coverage is not tied to employment, so that you don't have this problem like when you lose your job, you lose your insurance. Mm-hmm. In those cases, the government automatically connects you with the coverage you need to keep continuity. That's one of our biggest persistent problems. If you lose a job with good coverage, then you're out on the market. Are you going to be able to find something or not that works for you? It can be pretty challenging. Of course, it's much better than it was, because we now have a system where you cannot be denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition, but that doesn't really get into what that coverage is going to cost you. And many people find that even in this somewhat improved system, it can be extremely expensive, even prohibitively expensive, to find your way on the private market. Now, there are programs in some states that support people in that jam, but then other states not. As you know, some states have accepted the Medicaid expansion. Other states have not. So it's kind of a mixed-up business, And in the context of that mix of a system that's not coherent, we lose a lot of money. It's very much more expensive than it would have to be with a single coherent system, whether it's a Canadian or a German model. And when you have it's even worse than just complicated. When you have a kind of incoherent system, there are more opportunities for monkey business here and there, for people to abuse the system, for providers to overcharge, et cetera, et cetera. It's ironic. You know, we have a Medicare system that for our seniors
it's
works
working very well.
Very well, thank you. Yes. There's a little fuss and bother about reimbursement rates and that kind of thing. But many of us feel like an improved Medicare system, extended possibly incrementally to more and more people over time, would be the most workable way ahead. In other words, you could have a system where you extend the coverage to those who are over 65, maybe down to 55, and then you cover the children. at the other end, and you get that working smoothly, then you extend further and further
into the middle.
And allowing the private market to cover the people in the middle. That seems like a kind of sensible approach to me, but the problem is our debate is really driven by politics.
I heard that point at the beginning, rather than values
or even what's practical. What's workable is not the question. It's like what's politically feasible at any given time. And one of the legacies, one of the realities that Obamacare faced was dealing with all the powerful players with money in the game, the pharmaceutical companies, the hospitals, the insurance companies, the medical providers, and so forth. And the compromise that was worked out had to satisfy all of those players. So that's that explains pretty quickly why we got what we got, kind of a mixed system.
I've always been kind of curious why the insurance companies haven't supported a more Obamacare-like plan, because they are automatically receiving more applications, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I mean, after all, they're required. People are required to have insurance, and so the insurance companies are going to benefit.
Did they actually
oppose this, or were they just very quiet about it to satisfy certain kinds of constituencies that they were beholden to?
Yeah, well, I think it was mixed. I mean, I think to some extent they supported it because it looked like they would benefit, and indeed they did. In a similar way, the pharmaceutical companies were brought on board by the government agreeing not to negotiate for price, cheaper prices, the way other governments do. So we're actually paying sometimes twice as much or even more than, say, people in Canada pay for the same drugs.
Is that going to be a real obstacle to overcome that lobby to get our prices down?
Absolutely.
That's going to be tough to do. It's a powerful lobby.
There are so many different ways to take the discussions into the weeds, so to speak, to create confusion in the public mind. It's hard to be super optimistic about moving forward, but we'll just have to see.
One of the arguments of the pharmaceutical industry is that it must remain privatized and with high costs, especially for the initial introduction of until it becomes generic, in order for the pharmaceuticals to have enough money to experiment with new drugs, therefore benefiting everybody.
Yeah.
Is there another model for that?
Well,
Government grants or something?
Yeah, I mean, there could be more. There already are, to some extent, quite a bit of government money going into research. I guess it's, it's a question of the right balance, perhaps, between the public interest and private profit. And I didn't bring the figures here this morning, but the profitability of drug companies is way, way ahead of the average for companies. The rate of return is very, very high on drugs. So if one takes a look actually at the numbers, you see they could give a bit.
They could give a little more.
Back to the public interest. Yeah. And this really relates to a central problem, I think, whether we're talking healthcare, talking environmental policy, talking about the government in general. I think we have a kind of magical thinking going on having to do with markets. I think people on the conservative side of the political debate have a notion that markets are moral, that they deliver a moral outcome. They have a notion that markets are free, when in fact markets are never free. They're always shaped by rules that someone's making in someone's interest. So the debate is not free versus encumbered, but it's like whose interests are going to be served, the American people as a whole or private companies. And they also have a notion that markets are efficient in delivering what we need. And, in fact, often they're not. Often their side effects are quite destructive. And I think until we really had that conversation or that argument and resolved that, I think we're really hampered at making progress in the healthcare area, but also environmentally and just generally. They're interests that benefit from weak government, from government that's gridlocked. And I think these, you could make a case, if we have more time, that there are people actually funding gridlock who benefit from it and are quite content with a government that's just
status quo
and unable to really govern. That actually.
Along those lines, do you foresee any changes in the healthcare debate toward adopting one of these two major models? I take it the two major models we talked about are the German and the Canadian. The Canadian, where the government, it's a single-payer system.
It's like Medicare.
And it's Medicare for everybody, for younger people. The other one is the German model, which is something like Obamacare, where the government supervises, regulates, but private companies.
The closest thing there might be the state of Massachusetts, which has a system of private insurance, but it's more regulated than generally speaking. And Vermont was looking at a system that would have been very like that with bidding process, and then one company would provide insurance for the entire state. The government would have a voice in pricing and what was covered in the policies and stuff like that. That's kind of on hold now, as I understand.
Until the next election, perhaps, or even beyond.
Maybe even beyond.
We'll wait to see what some of the issues are as the election cycle begins to develop. But I've not heard anything yet major about taking steps beyond where we are. It seems to be a hot potato. They want to let it cool down a bit, perhaps.
And one of the things that's true, once people have benefited, if you have something like 16 million have got insurance, I mean, that's a constituency that's going to be very upset
that's
if you
true.
Suddenly take it away from them.
Yeah.
And those people all have relatives and family, friends, and so forth who are now a lobby for the existing Obamacare with all of its imperfections.
It's going to be hard to see that being rolled back right now, whatever we may think. That one may be cooling. But in the meantime, steps forward, you're saying then steps forward to one of these other models at the moment is, may I say, hidden. We don't know what's going on. We're probably not going to hear about it much during the current election cycle.
Right, except in Pennsylvania, we have a bill about to be introduced in June in the state legislature that would offer a kind of single-payer program for the state of Pennsylvania. As far as I know, it doesn't have a name yet, but it's based on a bill that was introduced several years ago. It's been sort of reworked. And there's been a feasibility study conducted by professional outsiders and so forth showing that it could work. The last version of that I read, it would still be connected with the employer, but it would be funded through a tax on the employer and the employee that each would be quite a bit less than what employers now have to pay for private insurance. So we'll see. That would have a long road to travel in the current state legislature, unfortunately, though. So I think it's going to be incremental improvements. I think a lot is happening among providers to provide better care, more efficient care, to experiment with other ways of paying providers so that it's not so much a fee for the amount of tests you can perform, but rather compensation based on keeping people healthy. There's a number of different models for that are being tried. So I think we have a gradual reform of healthcare delivery, which is really essential to keeping healthcare affordable. There's a great resource, if I can give a plug, on WITF, Transforming Health, on their website. If you just Google Transforming Health, WITF, they have an archive of articles about healthcare, the whole healthcare situation, and reform, and things that are happening. It's a great resource.
It's good to have that resource. In the meantime, to summarize your own position, you are most hopeful that we might have Medicare. You think that's the most workable model for as much of our our population as possible, and maybe doing it in incremental stages?
To me, that's the most affordable. If we're interested in providing coverage to everyone as inexpensively as possible, I think the Medicare model is really...
We know how it works. It has worked. We know its strengths and weaknesses.
Right.
Now it's just a matter of applying it to other segments of the population.
Right, and it would make sense practically to extend it gradually. I think that's most workable. Now, politically, I don't know that that's at all viable at this current environment.
Right.
So I think the likeliest thing is we'll see improvements across the country at the local level in delivery of care, and wherever possible, using the existing resources to get care to people, as many as possible, given the limitations of the current system. So there will be, I think, some positive improvements happening, especially around affordability.
Mm.
But it's tough in an incoherent system to get that done. But there are a lot of good people out in the world that are working on that.
It's been a pleasure to talk to Will Lane today about Where Are We Going with Healthcare? He's the director of the Writing Center at Gettysburg College, the former chair of Adams Hanover Healthcare for All, PA, and chair of Green Gettysburg for the Seminary Explorers. I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.